This is Vito Chirko from CST Radio's Chirko & Company. This week, I had the chance to sit down and chat with UDM alum Gerald Smith about a variety of topics, including his current role with Comcast, his past work with Detroit Public Television, and the ways in which the city of Detroit can be improved upon and further reinvigorated in the future.
So it was a 70 to 74 stretch that I did my undergraduate work and received a degree, an AB degree in history. Honor student. Student activist, was a president of a group called the Black Student Coalition, and this group was formed to address the issues of the war against Vietnam. At that particular time, there was racism on campus. There was a lot of
Civil rights, right, was a major issue and
huge at that time.
The riots happened before you started here on campus, but you probably became accustomed to it because of being around during that era.
No doubt about it. And this university was, in some ways, was kind of separated from that, although it was right in the city. But we saw some of the same issues, Vito, on this campus as we did in the larger community. So we said, you know what? You know, we're going to deal with this as a part of this community. So we not only organized students, black and white, in this effort, but we also involved the surrounding community residents because this university, as we put it, was a part of this community and not an island within the community. So we had 10 or 15 demands. We presented to the president of the university at that time, Father Malcolm Caron, who was a very good friend of mine, by the way. He ended up kicking me out of school, but that's another story. And then we ended up getting back in. But all the students that were considered leaders at that time were all honor students. And we all felt the need and desire to address some of these issues on campus as we had in the larger community. So, for example, painting that Madonna statue black. And we did some disarray of the library to kind of disrupt activities of the university. And one day, Vito, we actually closed the university down. We sat in the middle of Florence and Livernois with signs and banners saying stop the war, stop racism on campus. And I have some photos I'm going to share with you.
Oh, thank you.
At some point in time, some brochures kind of reflect that. But it was a tumultuous time at that time. You just mentioned the war and the racial strife and the civil unrest that happened here in the city was indicative of the times in which we were going through back in the early 70s as well.
Now, because of that civil unrest and that racial strife and whatnot, were there actually separate organizations, too, for blacks and whites than on campus at that time at U of D when you were a student?
Certainly.
So people were separated based on race then?
They were, and you know what? It was institutionalized because of the way the university was organized and structured that way. But there were students, Vito, that looked beyond that and said, we're going to form our own structures. We're going to form our own organization and coalitions. And that's the key thing. It was coalition building in which you bring different people, different groups of people together, whether it's, racially or gender-wise or whatever, bring them all together. And there was some common cause that we certainly met around that gave us the impetus to move in the way that we did. One is that war in Vietnam. I mean, no one wanted war. We had a ROTC on campus, and they were recruiting people to go to the war. Stop it. So one of our major demands, get rid of ROTC on the campus, stop the war, stop the killing. And then we also, looked at the issue of parking. Why there was no real student parking at that time. So it was privileged parking. I mean, little things like that.
Whites then?
No,
back
just
then
for
or for the faculty and staff?
Faculty and staff.
Okay.
There was no student parking at that time. So we had to park wherever we could park,
And that made no sense back then, obviously.
Exactly.
As it wouldn't now,
right.
Either.
Well, Florence at that time was a real street that had gone through. You have a cul-de-sac now because with the security gate and all that, that's all. That's the way it is now. But back in those days, it was a catch-as-catch-can just on the parking front. And then dorms. Certain students weren't allowed to live on certain floors. I mean, there was just certain innate and subtle forms of racism that was happening on this campus that we thought were intolerable. So, it was just a quality of life on this campus that we tried to improve, to bring the races together, to make it more of a humane environment in which we thought it wasn't at that time.
And I'll talk about your current role now as the senior manager of external affairs for Comcast in Michigan. What does that exactly entail?
Good question. I try to figure that out myself every day when I'm doing 1,000 different things.
There's a lot
capacity.
To it, right?
Yeah, it is. I oversee government relations, community investment, public policy in 83 communities in Southeast Michigan. That essentially means that I negotiate franchise agreements for different cities and communities. I also organize community events. I also weigh in on public policy that affects the cable industry. I also deal with customer service issues as well, oversee many of the concerns that our customers might have. So it's an all-encompassing position, and it's wedded in such a way that I interact with a variety of people, whether it's public officials, whether it's corporate people, whether it's grassroots communities. So the greatest part about my position, Vito, is the fact that I can go from the grassroots to the top roots all mm-hmm. in one breath. And it gives me real great impetus and motivation to do that. So this is what I do for a living every day.
So a lot of community involvement then as well within the city, obviously.
Cities.
And not just the city of Detroit then.
City of Detroit is one of them, one out of 83 communities. I stretch, if you look at the old hand here, I go from Detroit up to Port Huron, over to Flint and back down.
All across, huh?
All across, so all the way back down to south into Detroit. So some real, real interesting people that I interact with and engage in and with. And we're going through some major changes as a company right now, so it's going to be even more exciting as this year and the first part of next year unfolds.
Now, how did your role with the Detroit Public Television Station prepare you for this current gig that you have with Comcast?
Great question, because I worked for Mayor Coleman Young for 9 years. I ran Eastern Market and that development down there, and for 9 years. And then I was recruited by the president of Detroit Public Television, the late, great Dr. Robert Larson. He was starting, and this should really interest you, a new movement afoot to bring television to the community. So he called this community development. I said, community development? What does that have to do with television?
Uh-huh.
He says, well, we're going to have a mission that will enable people to tell their own stories. And the people themselves to weigh in terms of what they would like to see in their community, as opposed to me telling you what you need to do. So he developed a concept called InReach, in which people were able to tell their stories and use the, as he put it, the megaphone in order to heighten people's awareness and then compel them to act. Different from outreach. He said outreach is when you hire a plane and you drop flyers down on a community and hope they get the message once the flyers land, right? So with all that being said, he said, can you come and join me? I said, well, yeah, okay. So we engaged in some projects, some great, great projects called one was Project Graduation, which was trying to get teens not to drink and drive. We had a high school dropout program. We had a literacy program. Mm-hmm. And then we had a major focus on youth violence that was called Act Against Violence, which was ended up being a national program on public television. So with all these different projects going on, Vito, it really gave me personally the impetus to use these experiences and resources beyond where I was at that particular time. And I was recruited to go to Comcast. So I kind of took the same mindset in Detroit to become the director of government relations and community development for Comcast. So it was all about using the airwaves for social change.
To get your message out there, right?
Yes, yes. Indeed.
Within the community.
Yes, exactly. Very unique message. To the extent, forget the awards. I mean, they are what they are, but the real impact of how much of a difference can you make using these telecommunication resources? And I think we did.
And now you did as well with your radio show, right?
No doubt
about
it.
Back to back. How about that show? Emmy nominated.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I received 3 Emmy nominations. That radio show, which was the impetus for the television program, was a simulcast.
Mm-hmm. So radio and TV, right?
It was live, mm-hmm. which was a call-in program. Very, very. You did your history on me. I like that. but anyway, this program brought radio and television together, which was really a historic piece for this city, a live broadcast that William Kunstler, we had all kinds of different folks in from all over the country. We interviewed Ross Perot when he was running for president against President Clinton back in the early 90s. But the impetus on this show was, again, to spread the message of how to educate people on the issues that they are facing every day. And with my experience from public television and using the radio waves in order to get that across, we have record numbers of callers, Vito. On a 2-hour show, we have 50, 60 callers I mean, weighing in on issues, whether it was the Malice Green case with the police shooting of that young black guy years ago, to the election of Bill Clinton back in those days, which was historic because the Bushes had kind of a lock on the presidency for 12 years. So we had a lot of things going back.
So statewide and nationwide, too.
Yes, no doubt about it. And we were very pleased about that. Another key point about the radio show was a lady who actually formed that show called Back to Back. She was a second black female owner of a radio station. Her name was Martha Jean McQueen, who was historic unto herself. Bought that station from the old Booth Broadcasting, turned into an AM network, and had nothing but it was a classic radio station full of shows that reflected the community. So it was a real true tool for the community to get their word out. So I was just blessed that Robert Larson, the president of Channel 56, and Martha Jean McQueen, the president of the radio station, came together and said, we're going to put this show back to back on a simulcast.
Allow that simulcast to happen and to reach thousands, right, of people.
Yes.
Within the state and then also nationwide to a certain degree, right?
That's right, because Channel 56 had an uplink that went all the way down to the Caribbean.
Wow.
And people would, one of my callers said, man, I saw you. He was down in, where was he? He was in the Bahamas. Saying, I saw your show.
Mm-hmm.
Said, what did you see? It was broadcast, some kind of uplink, but I saw you last week on TV. He was down in the Bahamas. He says, whoa. And that was revolutionary back in those days. That was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You got an uplink that goes, I mean, that traveled through not only throughout the country and Canada, but in other countries in the Caribbean as well.
So what was the lasting impact you think of that show then, in your opinion, looking back at it right now?
Well, one, it was a simulcast, a live broadcast on radio and television. That was one thing. But the second thing I think was most important to me, it had longevity. That show lasted for 12 years, and that's a long time to do television. I mean, live television. None of those shows were taped. And I think what we were able to accomplish, Vito, was, one, educating people on the issues. And the great part about this show, it was on both sides. You didn't get one side issue. That's why it was called Back to Back. Mm-hmm. It was pro and con. And it gave people a holistic approach in terms of how to view an issue. You have the good side, you got the bad side. And like people would say, you got your point of view, my point of view, mm-hmm. and then the truth, right? So you could kind of weigh in terms of where you think that truth might lie. But I really think that because of this program, it laid the impetus for new programs that are currently on TV right now. I mean, you had the Point Counterpoint. You have right now Am I Right or Am I Right? That's on Channel 56 right now, which came as a result of a back-to-back. That's with Nolan Finley and Stephen. That came as a result of our
program. Your show, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we do think that if used properly, this can be a real defining tool, that is telecommunications, for social change, and it still can. My emphasis and problem with what's going on right now is the truth is not being told right now. And people, and with social media as it is today, people aren't given the ability to think, and people are being...
So not telling the truth starts with social media, then, you're saying?
Telling
is that
truth,
true?
Telling truth is who's telling it, mm-hmm. who's actually telling the story. And if they don't do the research, and if they don't really do the due diligence of finding out exactly where the truth is, and let me say this to you. Let me clarify that. A good friend of mine who was in the news business says, "News is whatever I tell you it is." Is that a good way to put it?
It's controlled by the news, right? What's put out there, and that's not the good thing you're saying, right?
I'm saying, Vito, define to me what is the news.
And Vito, what's done on the newscast, I would say, right by the news anchors.
No. News, you would tell me, says, news is whatever I tell you
mm-hmm.
it is. In other words, I'm telling you what the news is. I'm telling you how to think. I'm telling
what's being reported on, right?
Exactly.
So the bad, the crimes, the violence, all that's being reported on. How about the good stuff, right?
But I'm telling you that you're the person that makes the news,
mm-hmm.
who's telling the news. So it's behind the story. It's the story behind the story, as I mentioned before. And that's what's not being told right now. So you look at the war that's happening right now mm-hmm. in the Middle East. I mean, what's the impetus behind that? Or what's happening with the impetus behind Ferguson in Missouri? Or the issues surrounding gay marriage? I mean, all this. I mean, so let's just lay it out on the table and let people see it for what it is. And not and not come up with your own personal commentary and say, this is the news.
Just report the news, the straight facts, exactly. Not your commentary, not your input or takes.
Exactly.
The straight up news, right?
There you go.
The real hard news.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And let people decide for themselves.
And what's your goal then of reaching a larger audience with the real news, telling the truth and telling the true story behind all these different aspects of society nowadays?
You know, for me, it's staying in close touch with the grassroots in this community, wherever that community is. I want to be there where they are and interpreting exactly what their feelings are. And my spin is their spin. You know, if I'm willing to, with the ability to articulate, you know, what their experiences are in a holistic way, in a truthful way, in a compelling way, then I think I've done my job.
Now, what's your goal right now, primary goal for community outreach and your role with Comcast?
My goal is to make sure that companies and corporations like Comcast give back, continue to give back to the community, which, you know, they certainly, you know, gain a profit from. And for companies like Comcast to remain partners in the community. I mean, it's very important that companies really give back and become accountable to the community.
For their mistakes, right, as well.
And you know what? Not only their mistakes, but some of the triumphs. I mean, we should celebrate as much as we do, find fault. So I think there's a balance there that we need to create. But I think for my goal is to make sure that companies like Comcast really have a true commitment to community investment, not community outreach, but community investment in which you expend resources to increase the quality of life in the communities in which they do business.
How about growing the city of Detroit further economically and getting more and more people to come back to the city, to live in the city, actually? How can that be accomplished, and what are you trying to do in your role?
It's happening right now. I think the mayor, Mayor Duggan, is doing a wonderful job. Less than a year on the job, he's made some revolutionary changes right now. He's built coalitions with people, authorities, the Regional Water Authority, what he's been able to do with the Public Lighting Authority. I mean, some things, some very basic essential services, Vito. But let me say this to you. In order to make sure that we get a regentrification of people back into the city, it's going to require a safe city. That means that there has to be a holistic approach with respect to police and community working together, not as adversaries but as partners. There has to be some impetus given towards education. This educational system in the city will have to improve dramatically in order to reach reach people and families, younger families. If you want to recruit them back into this, you've got to have a great educational system, and you as well as provide long-lasting, sustainable jobs. Those three are
how can that
basic.
Be done, those three things then that you just talked about?
One, we have to continue to try to diversify the economy. It can no longer be a one-industry economy. It's been an automotive economy for time immemorial. And it's beginning to happen slowly with high-tech industries moving into the area and service tech. There has to be a way in which we educate the future of our children will have to be predicated upon more than just doing a K-12 graduate. There has to be some kind of a training along the way. A lot of children are not academically inclined, so what do? You just throw them away? I mean, they fall through the cracks. There has to be a way in which you demonstrate to them that there are alternatives to the basic K-12. It could be all kinds of different kind of industrial training. There's a variety of ways to do that. Computer-based training. That's one thing.
And then better technology, right, as well for these students.
No doubt about it.
At an early age.
I'm working with a project. That's a good point. I'm working with a project right now called Internet Essentials, in which we are taking low-income families and providing $10 a month Internet service and from K-12. So students will have the ability to learn how to work the Internet. But more than that, the families. Because if you don't know how to use this technology, you're going to be left behind. And that's going to create a tremendous problem. Because right now we've discovered that in certain urban communities, up to 70% of the people don't have Internet service. I'm not talking about iPhone. I'm talking about
a regular computer, right?
Computer,
desktop or a laptop.
Laptop, exactly. Because what we've discovered, you cannot do a 500-page, 500-word essay, Vito, with your thumbs. You're going to need a computer, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So what we're trying to do with this program, to your point, is to educate and provide people with the basic rudimentary skills in order to work the Internet. So if you get that done and get that accomplished, moving to the next phase, they'll be more prepared for education, a higher form of education, whether it's college, whether it's building and trades, whatever it is, they're prepared on the technology front to be able to handle that. So I think in that age, we got to be, get our people, whether they're here in the suburbs, in the rural communities, technologically prepared to order meet the challenges of
and more savvy at a young age then, too.
No doubt about it. And to do that, the younger, the better. And to get the parents, too, because a lot of these parents, there's an attendee fear on the part of the parents, too, that the, because they don't know. They pass that fear along to the children. Well, I don't want to deal with that because I don't want to deal with the internet.
So really it starts at home with the parents then, right?
Yes. And that's where people learn their fundamental social graces from is from home. So you got to get the parents involved too. There's no doubt about it.
Well, Mr. Smith, thank you very much for all your time today here on UDMCST Radio.
You know, it's good to be back home.
It's great to have you here too. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Peter. I appreciate you having me here.